Bear Down Bears fans, another edition of the Chicago Bears podcast coming your way. The head coaching search continues here with the Chicago Bears, and we got to get a former Chicago Bears insight on it as well. Jason McKee in the building with me. J-Mac, what's going on, my guy?
Man, everything's good. Recruiting season, man. So, you know, trying to get my seniors in college, you know, my young kids are starting to get opportunities and coaches coming in to evaluate them. So, I know the Bears have a head coaching search going on right now, which we'll get into with our special guest. But as a high school head coach, the season doesn't end as well. But I always make time for our Chicago Bears podcast.
J-Mac, when's your interview? They're getting everybody else on the list. Hey, man, they might as well throw you out there, brother.
The only person they didn't have on the list, they didn't have Olin Krutz. They didn't have me. They didn't have Happy Gilmore. I want to see Happy Gilmore's name on there. Man. Pat, you need to throw your resume up there. Pat, I'm bringing you along with my director of media, of you know what I mean? Director of marketing, all media content, Pat the Designer.
We're doing all, and that's what my name's going down as. I'm not putting my last name on it. It's going to say Pat the Designer on the plaque. Hey, man, we got to welcome a special guest into the show. We had him on last year when the Chicago Bears were trying to figure everything out with the quarterback position. And we would love having him back here. 30 plus years as an NFL scout in the NFL. He's been the scouting director for the Chicago Bears. He's been a big part of a lot of things that have happened with this franchise. Got to welcome into the show, Greg Gabriel, back to the show. Clap it up for Greg Gabriel, ladies and gentlemen. Sir. Greg, what's going on, my guy? How are you?
Hey, having a good time. J-Mac, I got one question for you. We're just talking in that lead-in about, you know, they haven't called you for the interview yet. I think Georgia's going to want you to win a state championship first, and then you'll go right to the top.
Oh, yeah, there
you go. You do, man. That's the goal, man. It's a tough league, man. High school football in the state is awesome. A lot of great teams, a lot of great history, a lot of great we're in a tough conference. We're in the premier conference. I keep telling Pat that, like, we're in the best conference in the state, so – It's always a playoff atmosphere every week, and I love every minute, every second of the grind. I love it. Love it to death. So,
you know, before we get into the Bears stuff, I got one question because I've been thinking about this for a while.
Let's do it.
You used to always play Joliet Catholic.
Yeah.
And I know they weren't on your schedule this year. What happened with that? Because it's, you know, both the Carmelites and
– Yeah, so – I always mess with Tom Thayer. I tell them they're running from us. You know, we play everybody. Like, we played at Loyola this year. We played Mount Carmel last year. But for some reason, they weren't on our schedule. So they haven't been on our schedule.
They ducking, J-Mac? You saying they ducking?
I think so. But no, it's two-year contracts with teams that you play. So, as you know, both teams get a home game. Right, both teams get an away game. So I'm sure that when they do the realignment and, you know, they rotate the schedule, we'll get them guys again.
Hey, listen, now I'm coming to that game when they put that back on the schedule. Yeah. It's there. Y'all ducking. Stop playing with J-Mac.
I gotta travel with him, and he talks trash all year. So I gotta, you know, that's definitely a game you want to be at.
I love it. Well, Greg, great to have you back on the show. First off, how have you been, my friend? It's been a while since we've talked last.
Real good. And this is a fun time of the year. Usually after the season's over, it's kind of a lull till we get to the combine.
Yeah.
And then free agency. And now with a coaching search going on, the news cycle doesn't stop.
Of course,
Bears fans go through several anxiety attacks a day thinking that so-and-so is going to be the head coach, and they just got to sit back and relax and watch the process.
I really wish we could be talking about the playoffs and not finding a new coach or a new quarterback or a new GM or a new president every offseason. But I mean, listen, it is the whirling conversation right now. When you look at the list of candidates that's out there, I want to start with this. The talk about having too wide a search. You've been in those rooms where the coaching searches are. Is there such thing as too big of a search? Are the Bears looking in too many places for head coaching candidates when you've got a Matt Kafka making his way on the list?
Well, I mean, that's an interesting name because that's a guy that's interviewed for head coaching jobs in the past and was considered a hot name and was an Andy Reid disciple. But really, I think what changed, if the rules were the way they used to be, you'd probably see 8-9 names, but they changed the rules. And except for Vrabel, which he was out of the league, so they could do things differently. Mm-hmm. They can't hire anybody for a few weeks. So you got time. You might as well talk to a lot of people. And a lot of these interviews really don't mean a whole lot. They're really collecting information on players, on coaches, on schemes, you know, and just filing in a notebook, but they aren't serious candidates. They're never going to say that, but you know, that's what's going to go on. So, you know, the national media can sit and laugh at it all they want. I don't see anything wrong with it because of the way the whole program is set up this year and the league set that up. In the case with New England and Vrabel, you know, Vrabel is out of work, so he can sign a contract with whoever as long as they complied with the Rooney Rule requirements. And they, you know, that was a sham. And it's too bad because one of the guys he interviewed was a friend of mine, friend of Jason's in Pep. And yep. And I'm a little disappointed with Pep because that's one thing he told me never do. Yet he did it. And yeah. You know, neither one of those guys were real candidates or strong candidates. You know, Pep hasn't coached in the league in two seasons now. And I think the reason he did it was that he wants to, you know, he's out of contract now with Houston. You know, when that staff got let go, he had two more years left on his contract. And on top of that, he had a son who was a pretty darn good high school quarterback. So he was working with his son. Now he's going to Maryland. He'll be a freshman at Maryland on a scholarship in September. So he had his reasons, but now he wants to get his name out there because he's ready to go back to work.
That's how you get your name back in the coaching cycles. You start interviewing for coaching jobs.
Yeah, Greg, I want to talk about this. So in 2003 was my first year here in Chicago. You know, went through a coaching change. We had Coach Dick Duran, and then obviously the coaching change, we ended up with Lovie Smith. And you were a part of that process, the interview process, and, you know, aiding in that process to get Lovie Smith here and vetting out coaches and a part of the interviews. Let's go behind the scenes. What goes on in a head coaching interview?
You know, I should have brought up this one list. I got this list that Jerry put together that has like 146 questions on it. I got it buried downstairs in the pile. But we knew mid-season we were going to make a change. Mm-hmm. And in fact, the way that season started out, if you recall, you went out to San Francisco for the opening game and just got blown out, and it was kind of downhill from there. So we started doing, I mean, not only am I going out on the road looking for players for the next draft, but we started doing a lot of research on prospective coaches, making calls, talking to people, finding out about people. And there was also these videos that the league puts out. I don't know if the league still does this, but they used to have these interviews. They do them at the combine usually, where they'd bring a coach in, you'd sit down for an hour, and there'd be an interviewer asking a lot of questions and basic coaching search questions. They do it for front office people. They did it with me for a general manager search where I sat down for an hour, and it goes out to the different clubs who are looking for a position to fill. So we had these, and we were looking at the different ones. And the guy that really kind of jumped out on his, and even though he wasn't boisterous, was Lovie.
Yeah.
But Lovie wasn't the main focus at first. I mean, Jerry had in the back of his mind, if you know Jerry's history in coaching, one of the first jobs he had was at Syracuse. One of the guys on that same staff, it was Dick Maloney, I think his first name was Dick. Saban was on that staff. And Saban and Jerry became really close friends. So that was in the back of his mind, is that's the guy I want to get. And Saban was at LSU then. But he was still, you know, talking to a bunch of people. Like, we went out for the East-West game, which was like a week and a half after the season ended, and Jerry interviewed three guys out there. Nobody knows about that. One name has been made public, and that was Jeff Tedford, who was the head coach at Cal.
Yeah,
remember Jason? Yeah, Roger. Yeah, remember Pat Hill?
Yep, he was Fresno State.
Fresno State. Well, Pat Hill worked for Belichick and Belichick's original Cleveland staff. So did Saban. So did, you know, there's a few other guys, the Iowa coach, what was the Kirk Ferentz was on that staff. So Jerry does those guys. I sat in for part of those, not all of them, but they're all kept quiet. Then he leaves there and he goes right to Saban's house, flies to Baton Rouge. Nobody knows it. He, you know, and he stays right at Nick's house. He was there for, I think, 2 full days. And then he comes back, and that's the one we were trying to get done. And people seem to think, well, the Bears didn't want to pay. And that wasn't true. We had – now, it was a tough negotiation, and there was some MFing going on between Jimmy Sexton, who was Saban's agent, and Ted Phillips. Because Ted was – Cliff wasn't doing that negotiation. Ted was. I thought
Cliff was in there.
No, Cliff had, you know, been with us, but he was just doing players at the time. And Ted was doing this one. But anyway, they finally made an agreement on money. But the thing that Nick couldn't come to an agreement with was Jerry wasn't giving up the control of the 53. And no general manager should give that up. And that's what it was all about. And so – then, you know, you fast forward, Nick stays at LSU. 2 years later, he goes to Miami. He has control of the 53. He stays there 2 years because he figured out, you know what, this ain't for me. Yeah. You know, so it was a blessing. And then we had to, you know, not really restart the search, just go back. And it got down. There was it was Lovey and Russ Grimm and one other guy that were like finalists. And I don't remember who the third guy was, to tell you the truth, but we've brought them in and let them talk to the media too. And just to make a little bit of a show out of it. And the media kind of favored Grimm because of the way he presented himself, where Lovey was Lovey.
Yeah.
And, but you know, Jerry had a history with Lovey, worked with him at Tampa Bay, knew him well, knew he could work with him here. And he turned out to be the guy. But reality was, he wasn't a hot guy. Mm-hmm. He wasn't the name that everybody said, you got to get that guy. And you can say the same thing about Dan Campbell in Detroit. He was never a coordinator.
Yep.
He was never people were laughing at Detroit 4 years ago when they hired him. What are they hiring this guy for? The guy that's not the hot guy a lot of times is the best guy, and that's what they got to hire.
It's so interesting. The last search that technically worked out and was successful is the Lovey search for the Chicago Bears. We haven't had a ton of success with head coaches since moving on from Lovey. And to me, you know, this second round of interviews is getting started here. And it almost feels like there's a ton of names that the Bears can choose from that you could see success from. If you bring in Mike McCarthy, I think he brings a winning culture. If you bring in Pete Carroll, which I don't know if I'm in on that, you know, 73.
No, he'll be 74. I did a little research on that.
Yeah,
now, he'll be 74 before the start of the season.
Yeah. No disrespect to people.
There's been one coach who was 74 in the league. That was Romeo Crennel, who actually I worked with in New York. He was on Parcells' staff. Yeah. Rat was the interim head coach in Houston for part of the season when he was 74 years old, and then retired right after that. There's been no regular head coach in the league who's been 74 years old. I just didn't see it happening. I know Pete's young at heart. He takes care of himself. But reality is, I'm almost 74. So, you know, I know what the realism is here, is that health situations can change in a heartbeat.
Yeah.
And on top of that, the drive you got to have to be a head coach. You got 6 months a year when you're working 16-hour days.
Yeah.
I know. I as good a shape as I'm in, I couldn't begin to think of doing that. Nor would I want to.
For sure. But I think my point in bringing those guys up is it seems like there's a multitude of directions the Bears can go to get this coaching search right. No question.
I mean, there's a lot of good names there.
There's
six jobs open. And the team that's really on the outside looking in because of the way the rules are set up is Dallas.
Dallas
cannot interview two of the best candidates in Aaron Glenn and Ben Johnson because they missed the window last week to do it. You had to interview them last week. Now you got to wait until they're done.
Yeah, it's so interesting seeing how this could actually play out in the Bears' favor with them, excuse me, interviewing Mike McCarthy today. I mean, like this could be a layup, and I know a lot of people have been out on McCarthy. I've said Ben Johnson's my number one, but if your backup failing plan is you land on a guy who's a 60% winner in the NFL, who's got a Super Bowl, who spent most of his seasons in the league in the playoffs, I don't think that that's a bad situation for you to be in.
Yeah, almost 70% of the seasons he's been a head coach, he's gone to the playoffs.
Yeah, he's proven. And that's my next question for you, Greg. Like when you look at the current state of the Bears, right? You look at the roster, and I know we can't get into who's going to be returning. You know, I know we know the key pieces, the main guys that they have returning in that building. When you look at the structure of the Bears, you know, when you look at this coaching list that they have and the coaches they've interviewed and the coaches they're still trying to bring in, who do you feel like is the best fit for this franchise moving forward?
Well, in all honesty, Jason, I don't have a favorite. Mm-hmm. I got like 5-6 names that I want to see be second interviews next week. I mean, and the reason I say that, and I've said this to people before, is you and I aren't sitting in that room listening to the interview.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
How the hell we know what the hell, you know, we could say, oh yeah, that guy's really good. We want him.
Right.
Like I said a little while ago, how do you know he's really good? We've seen guys, you know, perfect example. The real hot name a few years ago was Robert Saleh. Remember, I mean, that's the Messiah is going to the Jets and going to be the great head coach. What happened?
Yep. Yeah.
They ran him out of town.
So how much does the situation you put the coach in matter as well, right? Because the one thing that I'll say, listen, I don't think that Matt Eberflus is a great head coach. You also never gave his offense an offensive line for it to work with. I think that's very important for quarterbacks in this NFL. Just ask Sam Darnold for what he saw. You also, when you look at the defensive line, we had questions the entire tenure he was here outside of the 1 year you brought Montez Sweat. How much of it is not just, hey, you got to get this head coaching right, but the Bears have to change their mindset on going out and getting the right players at the right position. We had all the wide receivers in the world, and Caleb spent 68 times this season on his back.
Right. No, I've always been of the philosophy that you build from the inside out. And so you got to take care of the lines. And Jason knows this. I mean, our offensive line when Jason was here was tremendous. But the thing is, we didn't draft – Olin was the only draft choice, and we didn't draft him. We inherited Olin. All those other guys were free agents that we brought in, and we did – there's different ways you can do it. Now, in fairness, we didn't have to spend for those guys. We had really good players, and we thought, like, John Tate was a huge contract, but by today's standards, it was nothing. And, you know, we just did a good job finding the right players that were good fits, you know, to play here. And some of them were really good leaders, good people. You know, Reuben Brown, I had known because I'm from Buffalo. He played all pro in Buffalo numerous years. Mm-hmm. I thought at first when he came in, knowing Reuben, I said, oh, this is going to be fun with him and Olin. And, you know, he kind of stepped aside. This is your team, man.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think when you look at it, too, and like what Pat's saying, Greg, you look at the GM, the scouting department, you know, departments that you are all a part of is very vital to the success of the team, but only vital to the success of the head coach. Right. It's like you bring in the chef, but then, you know, you're not letting him pick his ingredients. So you want the meal to turn out right. So it's vital for you guys to get it right. Like you said, with the free agents, John Tate's, you know, Fred Miller's, Reuben Brown's, you talked about that. How would you assess Ryan Poles' job so far? And, you know, what do you think they're going to do with him, you know, in terms of he's getting the extension? Do you think he's just going to play out this 1 year? Like, what do you think? How can you forecast that?
Well, I don't think you can. And I'm not sold that he doesn't already have more time on his contract. I mean, because they never released that.
Right.
It just wouldn't make the same guy negotiated his contract and Flus' contract. Mm-hmm. Why would he go in there and get his GM one less year than his head coach. I mean, that didn't make sense. And those contracts were done like within 48 hours of each other by the same guy. Because I think, you know, Poles was hired like on the 27th of January and Flush the 29th, or it was the 20th. It was only a 48-hour difference. So I think he's got – I could be totally wrong. I just think he's got two more years left.
I thought that was the whole point of him coming here. Right? Remember, they offered him the same thing in Minnesota, but he was given – from what it was reported back then, he was given more time. It's only recently that we've seen it come out that he was on a four-year deal and that this is his last year, and he didn't give us any insight into anything during the press.
No, he never has. He said one thing in the presser that I thought was really interesting from a personnel standpoint, because he was 100% correct. You know, he said, we only got a handful of free agents, but we're not making a decision on any of them until we find out who the staff is. And that's important because you got to know –
definitely
what they're looking for. You know, you draw, you write up a profile for each position. Like when Lovie came here, we knew exactly what Lovie wanted.
Yeah.
Yep. You know, especially on the defensive side of the ball. And you went out and we tried to find those types of players in the draft. You know, we had no three technique then, because the year before, with your first year here, we had all those elephants along the defensive line.
Yep.
You know, Ted Washington and Philip Daniels, those guys. So we had to find a whole different type of player. We drafted Tommy and Tank that first year.
Do the Bears, in your mind, have a scouting issue? Because it seems like they feel that their talent is better than where it is. When you look at Braxton Jones and how he struggled throughout the last few seasons at the same thing, but they don't want to upgrade that position, where they're willing to go out and spend money on DeAndre Swift. But when you get into the fourth round, nobody looked at Bucky Irving and went, hey, that might be a dude that you want to draft and add to your team because he runs like an absolute monster. Oh, by the way, you went punter. It feels like when they look at the talent that they have, one, they hold it in too high regard, and two, they're overlooking so much talent that was available to them.
Well, one, all personnel departments think their team is better than it really is.
I like that.
No, it's the truth. You almost need a guy like on the outside to come in and say, this is what I think your team is. You know, like hire a consultant and just, you know, short-term thing. Go through the roster and say, you know, what he thinks about each player or each key player and go like that, because he's going to give you a more honest opinion than sometimes the people in the building do, because you have relationships with them. And you're hoping they would grow. Like with Braxton, I've always been a big Braxton fan because just the natural traits are rare. I mean, they're like first round traits that a guy who comes from Southern Utah. But the fact is, he's like hit a wall, and he isn't, you know, he grew and then he hasn't gotten any better.
Yeah.
And so is he going to restart climbing the mountain, or is he hit his ceiling? And part of that will be up to, you know, the next coaching staff to make that determination, because the first thing they're going to do is they're going to start breaking down the tape, looking at the roster and saying, you know, I want this guy, I don't want this guy fits, this guy doesn't fit. So you're going to have, depending on the schemes that they run, there's going to be roster turnover. How much? We don't know yet, because we don't know what they're going to be doing, especially if they do an entirely different defensive scheme.
Yeah.
You know, you could want some bigger guys being brought in than what they're playing with now.
Yeah, Greg, when, you know, we're putting so much focus on just the head coach, like, talk about how important it is, like, when that head coach goes throughout these interviews and he presents his plan, but he also presents the assistants he's bringing along. And I tell Pat this, you know, all the time, like, the position coach is more important than the head coach, because he's going to be around, he's the head coach of that position group, so he has more of an influence and impact. So talk about how important it is when they're vetting out these coaches, and when these coaches are presenting this plan in this package, how important is the assistance, you know, to aid in that process of them getting hired?
That is one of the most important things. And the difference between now and, say, when we hired Lovie. Mm-hmm. When we hired Lovie, assistant coaches were all grouped together as far as the league is concerned.
Right.
And, like, Lovie's wanted to hire Marinelli as the DC. And so we go put in a permission slip to Tampa, and Tampa says no. Well, they can't say no now, because it's a better job. He was a defensive line coach at Tampa, and when you put in a slip and it's a better job, they got to say yes.
Yeah.
That's one of the reasons you got all these titles, you know, sitting around in Hallis Hall and every other building, you know, run coordinator, the passing game coordinator, assistant head coach. It's all titled so you can get the guy.
Yeah.
And but one of the key parts of the interview is, You're already telling them who your staff is. Hey, this is going to be my OC. And then you got to make a sham of the interview, because when you hire coordinators, you got to go out and you got to, you know, interview a bunch of guys, and you got to satisfy the Rooney rule, when you know darn well, so they're never going to say who the guy's going to be.
Yeah.
But he's already got his guy.
Yeah. That's the part where, with a lot of this process, I do wonder, you know, if Ryan Poles has landed on his decision already based on the first round of guys, based on the first round of guys that he wanted to bring in. You know what I mean? It was very obvious. It was very quick. Season ends. We're going to put in a request for Ben Johnson. Bring Aaron Glenn with him. We'll see. Like, I wonder if Ryan Poles has his guy already. And I love the fact that you brought out, you know, that he's going to let his guy make more of the decisions and wait to see what the free agents, until the head coach is in here, because I feel like with what they did with Flus last year, with what they've done throughout this process, it's been all backwards, Greg. Like, they go hire the GM, the coaches there 2 days later, but they were already interviewing Flus. They get the GM and the coach, and then they go get the president. We got all the wide receivers and DBs in the world. We got no trenches. Like, it feels like everything that they've done has been backwards in this process.
No, I hear you. See
it moving in the, dare I say, the logical direction. I'm not saying you can't do it this way and he won't find four offensive linemen this offseason and we're sitting there like, oh, he's a genius again. But it seems very unlikely.
No, well, I honestly think that they got to bring in four offensive linemen this spring, two from the draft, two free agents.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Probably got to really, you know, break the bank on one of the free agents. And they got money to do it. And they need at least, you know, depending on what they're going to do on the defensive side of the ball, I think they need one more. They need another big guy. When they lost Billings inside, yeah, that was a lot. So you need, you know, Gervon Dexter's got a bright future, but you need another elephant in there who, when you do the rotation with Billings, that you got a guy who's a consistent run stopper.
Yeah. And I
think that's how I see it. Now you're there every day.
Yeah. I think too, I think, you know, to your point too, Greg, I think you got to have that big guy in the middle, that run stopper, but you also need another guy on the edge, I think, that can generate
no pressure.
Because, you know, in this defense, as you know, similar to the one that we had, we had guys that could rush the passer. We had Alex Brown, you had Wale, you had Mark Anderson. You know, they tried to do it via young guys in Austin Booker, and then they, you know, you found a gem in Daniel Hardy. But, you know, I think, you know, you hear Coach Washington at the end of the season talking about rush and cover, right? Well, those guys are covering forever because there's no pass rush. Like, there's no rush at all. So, but I think a lot of holes to fill, but I think when we hear a lot of these guys, right, throughout their interviews, end of the season, and even during the season, they talk about, you know, they need more accountability, they need more discipline. When you look at this list, who do you think would be the fit in terms of the accountability factor, being able to, being the disciplinarian? You keep hearing that leader of men, like, okay, who
do you one of the names I want to see be a second interview guy,
mm-hmm,
was interviewed yesterday, David Shaw. Okay. Now, I mean, that's a guy I've seen him coach a few times. I've met him once.
Mm-hmm.
Pep worked for him
the Stanford
for a long time.
Yeah.
He developed Andrew Luck. Mm-hmm. He's coached 9 years in the league. Now, he hasn't coached in the league in 19 years, but he coached 9 years in the league. He comes from an NFL family. His dad was a lifer NFL guy, you know, so, but he ran a great program at Stanford, which is a very difficult place to win. And he won there until the end because you can't get guys in there. It's like you got an Ivy League school and you're trying to compete with, you know, the big guys in college football, and the school won't go along with you.
Yeah,
and that,
yeah,
and that's why I left. He finally, you know, the administration's making promises to him. Yeah, we're going to lighten it for you so you can get guys in. And then, no, we're not. He can't get in, and he's got no players. Mm. You know, so he stepped away. Now he's working for the Broncos in personnel, and I think he just wanted to get a good feel. But there's a if you recall, you go back a few years ago, he was on the list every year, and he was going to be the hot guy. And this was only like 3 years ago. And he turned down every single interview. So, no, I'm staying here. I think now he's ready. So if he's got that fire, he checks the boxes. He's a disciplinarian. He runs a tight program. Somebody said, well, describe him. And I kind of said, you know, it might be Lovey on steroids.
Mm.
You know, that type of personality. I'm sorry, what?
You just set the Bears fan base on fire. I don't
drop that name. No, I mean, that's my point of view, only because I've seen the guy in action.
Yeah.
And I know people that have worked with him, and, you know, the players that have come out of the players he turned out. Now, it's not that he had a ton of players, because at Stanford. But the players that he turned out that came into the league are damn good players.
Yeah, yeah. McCaffrey too, right? Was McCaffrey with him, or was it before?
Yeah.
Yeah, McCaffrey. No,
with him.
No, he's with him, yeah, because he had Luck, McCaffrey. He had a.
He's only not been to Stanford this last past two seasons, 23 and 24. He was there in 22.
Yeah, and they ran a pro-style offense too. They had a fullback.
Yeah, his offense is the, you know, Pep was his OC, and then the Colts draft Andrew Luck. And they right away hire Pep to be the OC.
Right.
And, you know, so he ran the same, pretty much the same offense in Indianapolis that he ran at Stanford. And he, you know, threw for 4,000 yards his rookie year, had all the success. And, you know, so it's changed. And when I was working with Pep and the XFL, I said, is your offense now still David Shaw's offense? He goes, well, I tinker with it, you know, to get it more up to date with what's going on. But yeah, the base of it is still the same thing.
Only question I would have with Sean, it's a question I have with a couple of the candidates on the list, right? And I would ask y'all this, is there a point where, while yes, he's still been a part of the game more recently, where it kind of starts, your system gets outdated. The game starts to pass you by as you stay away from it in that capacity. Because to me, when I look at David Shaw's offense, it's not an offense I want with my young star quarterback.
I know exactly what you're saying, Pat, and I agree with you. And if he can't update it,
right,
then he doesn't belong being a coach,
right? Yeah,
and that all comes out. That all comes out in the interview process. Right. That's why I go back to, we aren't sitting in the interview room to hear what he's saying when he's answering questions like that. So, you know, I didn't say I want him to be the guy I hired. I want him to be one of the guys they talk to next week when they can do the in-face interviews. I think McCarthy is a given, but, you know, I talked to a national guy yesterday. He said he's going to New Orleans. He's coming here first. That's all I know.
He's here today.
Now, he's here now, right? He's here today. Right?
So
I don't know. I think Sylvie dropped yesterday that the McCaskies are taking him out to dinner. I was like, I don't think I've ever heard that.
I'm gonna meet him. I know where they're going, so I'm gonna go over. I'm gonna head over there.
Oh, wait a minute, Jake.
Sit down with him. I'm gonna go pick Greg up. We're gonna go sit in on that dinner, Greg. They owe us a couple steaks anyway.
Hey, I could put a big steak in my stomach right now.
I'm, We're gonna go crash that dinner, Greg.
Let me know how it goes and see if you can get the. Is McCarthy somebody who you think? Again, I said there's a bunch of names on here, and you said you've got your five guys. Is he somebody, or you know that because he's done it recently, that you think has a leg up on the competition of the guys he's going up against?
I don't know if he's got a leg up part. I mean, you got to look at the age and the experience as a positive, but also a negative. He's 61.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So how much longer is he going to be able to go? Because you don't want a guy for 3 years or 4 years. Hopefully you want a guy for 8 years.
Yeah.
And, you know, guys like Ben Johnson, the another name I like is Todd Monken.
Yeah.
Who I mean, he runs a great offense in Baltimore.
Yeah,
he's been a head coach, albeit at the college level at Southern Miss, and that's a hard place to win. So he was there 3 years, won 1 year, and Tampa Bay stole him away to make him the OC. You know, that next season. So he has been to college because he won two national championships for Georgia as the OC.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But, you know, he's a good coach. Brady in Buffalo, I think he's done a remarkable job. Brady outcoached Johnson a month ago when Buffalo played Detroit in Detroit.
Yeah.
Yeah. Here's a question, too. You know, how realistic is it, you know, one of these coaches on this list, you get the head coaching job, but then they bring in, you know, another one of these guys on this list to be their offensive coordinator, defensive coordinator. Like, is that a big possibility, or you think, you know, you don't get the job, you know, these guys stay where they're at, or is that even, you know, consideration, you think?
Well, I would think that if you hire McCarthy, Johnson, mm-hmm. Brady, Monken, they're the OC.
Yeah.
They're the head coach OC. So yeah, they will have a OC, but it's OC in title
right.
and in name, but the head coach is the OC. So and the same thing with Aaron Glenn on the other side. You know, Aaron Glenn would be the de facto DC, even though he's the head coach. Mm-hmm. The key with Aaron Glenn is who's your OC?
Yeah.
And if it isn't a name that really jumps out and he explains that, then that hurts his candidacy.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think what's going to be interesting too is I love that J-Mac brought this up because I do think there's some names that have been brought in and we know how the Bears have operated the last few years. It seems like they will take some of these guys and interview them and say, hey, you know, we know you're going to pick your guy, but I've got this great guy that you've never worked with that knows how to call a defense. And one name that stood out to me that I don't know if he's going to get the head coaching job, but Ron Rivera. I mean, you got an opportunity to bring Chico in and talk with him and of course, be around him. What would he bring to this team, either as a head coach? I don't know if that's going to be the situation here, but he was a DC for this Bears team. And Lance talks about him. Listen, we were aggressive and we were going to get to the quarterback when he was here.
You know, I remember, in fact, the GM at Carolina called me. He had gotten down to two finalists and both of them had worked for us.
Yeah.
It was Ron and Perry Fuel. Remember Perry?
Yeah, Perry.
And,
yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So, and he called me and said, so what do you think? And I told him a story about Ron, and you probably remember this. I think it was the first practice or first padded practice down at Bourbonnais. And we weren't that far into it. And Ron didn't like what was going on. And he just brought all the defense over and ripped them a new a-hole. Like, right away, we said, damn, that guy's good. I mean, and then, like, the whole tone of practice changed after that. Do you remember that at all, J-Mac?
Yeah, Ron was very fiery, man. He's just such a smart mind defensively. And, you know, like Briggs said, like our defense was aggressive. You know, people talk about takeaways and stuff like that. But, you know, Greg knows our defense practices it every day. I mean, running backs, we would be walking back to the huddle you know,
and they'd be stripping the ball from you.
And Peanut would punch the ball out. And I remember T. Jones would be trying to choke Peanut because he's like, you know, get away from me. Like, you're in the huddle. You're in the huddle. And Peanut's in the huddle with you punching the ball out. But
no,
that was the culture. So people throw out that word culture and standard. But if you're not living and breathing that, because culture is a living thing, like it's you have to. You know, it's a living thing. You have to, it lives and breathes, but it infatuates your football team. If you don't understand that, then you're not going to be successful. It's just a word. So yeah, Ron was definitely, we had a bunch of those guys on our staff, which, you know, made us have a good run. And when I look at this too, Greg, and look at this list, and I want to play predictor. When it's all said and done, who does your gut say will end up landing this Bears head coaching job?
It's too hard for me to say. I think it's like one of five. I literally don't have a favorite. Mm-hmm. You know, if they say McCarthy,
yeah,
fine. You know, I'm going to support it. If it's Ben Johnson, great. Mm-hmm. You know, I hope he turns into a really good coach because he's a young guy. Same thing if it's Monken or Brady. I got Aaron Glenn in there, and I got David Shaw in there. Aaron Glenn, because I think he's going to be a great head coach. I just don't know if he's the guy for here unless you know who his offensive staff's going to be.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I it's so funny because this is the first time probably ever with a coaching candidacy where I feel the same way as you do. I've said this, and I've talked about a bunch of these names over on the Breeze, talked about a bunch of these names here, where I see a situation where Joe Brady comes in and is successful. I see a situation where Aaron Glenn comes in, and yeah, he's more of a defensive guy, but from everything I hear from people around the league, they're like, yeah, he's exactly what Dan Campbell is. And if you think Dan Campbell is going to, I think that's the question I ask people with Aaron Glenn. Do you think Dan Campbell is going to survive losing his coordinators? Because if you think he's still going to be a good coach on the other side of this, then I have a little bit more confidence in Aaron Glenn if they're basically saying, this is Dan Campbell. That's the guy leadership-wise that you want on your team. When I look at the candidacy, I have a favorite. Ben Johnson's my favorite. Offensively, now as a leader, I don't know yet, but I would assume he's leading in some capacity in that building. Offensively, when you can say I've had the best offense for the past 3 years, and I built this offense, and I kept Jared Goff alive at a time where we didn't have Penei Sewell on this team, and this offensive line wasn't amazing, that puts you ahead of the pack to me. But if they announce tomorrow, yo, we're all in on Mike McCarthy, it is what it is.
Well, the one thing McCarthy, I think, has going for him is that I didn't really look at this until yesterday. As I looked at the staff he had in Dallas, mm-hmm. he has a pretty damn good staff now.
Yeah.
And that's the key. And you know, and to get back to what you said, well, what if they say, you know, we got a guy here. Well, in coaching, you don't have too many arranged marriages. Like that, you know, you got to give the head coach the opportunity. Yeah. Now, yeah, you can nudge him a little bit, especially if he doesn't really have a guy. Let's say Ben Johnson says, you know, I'm thinking about so-and-so for the DC and I'm not sold on it. Said, well, hey, Ron would love to come back here.
Right.
And we know what Ron is. So yeah, that could happen, mm-hmm. but it's in more cases than not. Perfect example was when Flus hired Getsy. That was a done deal when he got the job.
Yeah.
You know, and you know, Pep came in and interviewed, and somebody else interviewed, and Pep said, he called me right after, because he had called me, and he said, can you run down all the players on the offense with me so I know what I'm talking about? And I said, sure. So I actually wrote up every guy for him. Mm-hmm. And he calls me after the interview, he goes, they're hiring the guy at Green Bay. And this is, you know, like 2 days before they announced it. He goes, that's the scheme he wants to run.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's the only reason I say I feel like that may be something they're doing with the interviews, though, Greg, is because I look at Matt Eberflus, and you've been in the NFL longer than I've been alive, right? Have you ever seen a staff put together where the head coach worked with none of the guys in a previous spot? That was Flus's staff last year. He'd never worked with Waldron. He'd never worked with Washington, never worked with Thomas Brown, never worked with the only guy he'd worked with that from the staff before is Simo, who was the offensive lines coach, and he promoted him to the running backs coach. I had just never seen that in football, and it felt like a front office decision on these are your coaches, make it work.
Yeah, I can't answer that. I mean, I know what contracts say.
Yeah.
And contracts give the head coach the right to hire his staff.
Of course.
You know, so, you know, what happened in the course of that interview process when they were going out and trying to get new coaches of the offense and how much say Ryan had versus Flus, I don't have the answer to that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Have you seen that before though? Where like it's a staff made up of guys like that you've never worked with before?
The only time I saw it, and really it was with Flus, was when Ballard had a deal with Josh McDaniels to coach down in Indy. Yeah. And of course he walked out on it, and Chris brought in the defensive staff and he brought him in. Well, McDaniels signed off on all of them, but New England went to the Super Bowl that year. And so Chris was hiring the staff and these guys were all under contract. And then, and announced like Flus and about four or five other coaches already been announced. This guy's going to be the coach's dad. And then McDaniels says, no, I'm not coming. And, then he kind of said to Frank Reich, these are the guys you're taking.
Yeah. But that actually, you know what? I didn't even think about that. It's what Flus came from. He probably didn't even have a problem with it. It's what he got his job as. So he probably was like, I don't care. Pick the guys. I'll go get them.
I think too, you can look at it like this too. I think, you know, coaches, you know, they see other coaches work. Obviously they've coached against them too. They can always look at it and say, you know, I like the way he calls a game offensively. You know, I want to bring him in as my offensive coordinator if I ever have the opportunity. So I think plays a part in it as well. You know, in terms of, you know, you talk about Flus not hiring his own staff, but I think, you know, coaches admire coaches from afar. And they just said, hey, if I have an opportunity to work with him or bring him in on my staff, I would like to do it because I like the way he works. I've heard good things about him. So I think that could have been the case with Flus too. But normally you have a relationship, you know, with these coaches, because it's bigger than the X's and O's and scheme. Like, you got to have people in there that you can trust, you can rely on, because obviously at the end of the day, you know, despite what they're doing, your name, you're the head coach. So it all falls back on you. So, you know, they'll fail.
If there's one thing I learned is that, a lot of times you're like, you know, Jerry and I worked together in New York long time previous to when I came here, like almost 20 years earlier. And then he goes off to Tampa. But I knew if he got the job, I was getting the job because we had already, you know, talked about it. But you can't hire a guy because he's your friend. You got to hire a guy because you trust that he can do the good job.
Yes.
If you're hiring friends because you're taking care of your friendships, you're going to lose.
You're out of there.
Flus and Poles got the same agent. I had some questions there too. I don't know if that's
that. Well, that, you know, I'll tell you what now, because that's a good bit. That happens a lot more than you think, because, you know, there's a gazillion player agents.
Yeah.
There's a handful of coaching agents.
Yeah.
And so a lot of them have the same guy. Hey, Marcus Freeman, you know who his agent is? Ryan Poles' agent. It's the same guy.
Same guy, right?
Just,
Mr. Armstrong, right?
Trace Armstrong, right? Trace Armstrong.
Got them all, man. Hey, Trace looks like he could play DN right now. Trace is good, man. I saw Trace at the alumni dinner last year, and he's still like, man, he looks great.
Trace still got a little game to him. He still got that look.
Trace, like, he lives in the gym still, man.
Nothing wrong with that.
When you look at we saw interest, and we can kind of close it out on this. We saw interest in from the Bears, and from Ian Rappaport's report, they've been doing extensive research on Marcus Freeman for months now. If he wins this national championship here, was it Monday they play it?
Monday
night.
Is there any chance that he leaves Notre Dame? I mean, you know how winning at Notre Dame. You're a god now in South Bend.
Yeah.
I don't think my own gut feeling is if he does interview, nobody's going to know about it.
Yeah.
Mm.
Okay. But I don't think he'll interview. And Notre Dame is one of the four or five best college coaching jobs in America. He just got a huge extension that, by the way, has a huge buyout to go along with it.
Yes.
I just can't see him being a pro coach.
Mm.
He's never, we drafted him.
Yep.
I don't know if you remember him.
I remember 09,
fifth
right?
Round, fifth round. No, 08. Yeah. 08, right?
08, was it 08?
And he wasn't very good. He didn't live up to his expectations. A great athlete. I mean, he checked all the boxes as far as size, speed for a Will linebacker. He could run. He was like a 4.52 guy.
Yep.
We got down to the nitty gritty of cutting the roster and putting together the practice squad. We didn't even want to bring him back on the practice squad.
Yeah.
But that has nothing to do with coaching because he found his niche.
Yeah.
Yep.
And he's really good, but he was at three different clubs, two after ours. I think I don't remember who they were. I think one was Buffalo. Never more than practice squad, and it was just that 1 year. Then he got into coaching. He's never coached in the NFL. He's only been a head coach for 3 years now.
Yeah.
But he's he's a young guy. He's 39 years old,
yeah.
And I think that. He's really great with those 18 to 22 year olds. What's he going to be like with a 28 year old or a 30 year old?
Yeah.
Yeah.
The only thing I wonder is, and I'd love to get y'all opinion on this. Has college become pro sports to the point where they kind of know how to deal with the guys who are making money now? Because that was always the knock on college coaches. Well, how you going to deal with a dude that's making more than you are, that's making money as well, and can tell you no? Now it's like, well, yeah, but we just got Caleb Williams, and he had a $5 million NIL deal. You know what I mean? I'm dealing with a pro athlete back here.
It's
different. There's no question. I mean, there's guys that are making a lot of money now playing college football.
Yeah.
And that's actually – for the college game, it's keeping them in school longer.
Yeah.
We'll find out in 3 days how many underclassmen are coming out. Today's the last day that you can declare for the draft. But they give you like 3 days to change your mind before they release the list. So it'll be like the 17th or the 18th, the league will release the list. But the number really dropped last year. And I'm interested to see if it drops even more. We had, for years we were getting – 120, 130 guys, and last year it was like 65 or something. And I think it might go down again this year, and it'll weaken the draft for a few years, but then it'll, once it evens out and catches up, then it's actually going to be better for the NFL because these guys are playing more and learning more playing college football.
Yeah.
100%. If that makes sense. I mean, and instead of they're playing games and starting instead of sitting on a bench watching.
Yeah, no, 100%. 100%. I think it's tough, too, though. Like the college coaches that come through the school and that I talk to, they always bring up the point that it is hard because of the money that the kids are making in college. It's hard to really discipline them and uphold like a standard, because if you yell at a kid, for having a bad practice, for not paying attention to meetings, well, guess what? That kid's going into the portal, They said it's been difficult to really coach the kids just because they have that option now, and they're getting paid on top of that. But on the flip side, like you were saying, Greg, you get a guy like a Bo Nix, who had a good rookie year, who's more prepared because he had the opportunity to stay in college. And then when he comes into the NFL, everybody's surprised at how well he's done. But look, the amount of snaps that he got in college. He had more.
Sure, he was a 5-year starter in college.
Yeah. He had more snaps than Caleb Williams. So it's
Caleb was a 2.5-year starter.
Yeah, so he's
five whole seasons.
Yeah, so talent-wise,
Caleb Jack, I read a thing today that I thought was interesting, and who knows if it's really true.
Mm-hmm.
But Deion, Coach Prime, kind of holds these guys accountable. You aren't going to class and you aren't getting certain grades, we're withholding the money.
Oh no, that's facts. He said that in a you know, he puts everything on the social media. He said that in a then one of the first team meetings where he was like, "Hey, we fining you. If you wear slides, fine. If you not in class, fine." Like that's kind of what I mean though. That feels like a Tom Coughlin pro organization type of situation, not something we're used to seeing in the college game.
No, I get it. And you know, guys like Saban, there's been some basketball coaches. Chip Kelly is another example. Chip Kelly said, screw this, and walked away from the head coaching job at UCLA and went to Ohio State as the OC. You know, they didn't want to deal with it anymore.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It is different, man. It's such a different world. I didn't think we'd get here where you can actually put the money on the table in college sports. J-Mac, they showing up to the high school and just opening the suitcase up for some of these kids. Hey, Greg, before we get out of here, you got to be honest with me. You drafted Marcus Freeman in the fifth round, right? In the fifth round?
I think it was, yeah.
He looked at you with the eyes, didn't he? He's got a great look here at Notre Dame. He gave you that look. And you were like, we got to draft this kid, bro.
What are you talking
about? I don't remember a whole lot about the process with him, but if you knew Lovey was a trait guy.
Yeah.
And Lovey's an old linebacker coach. And he sees a guy and it's in the fifth round and he runs a 4.5. And as athletic as he is, he lights up.
He got the antenna.
He looks and he goes, Greg, gotta give me that guy.
Yeah, he had him. Greg, remember he had him? He had Leon Joe, all guys that could run.
Yeah.
Leon Joe, yeah. Marcus, all they were the same mold, same type of guy.
So. Y'all had the athletes, man. Y'all had all the athletes. Listen, Greg, we appreciate you coming through. We appreciate you taking the time out of your day, man. Always great insight. Always great to talk football with you. Let the people know where they can find you at.
On Twitter, G Gabriel Football. I don't know what the hell the name is. G Gabe Football, something like that. I don't know. And then I do my podcast for the Bar Room.
Oh yeah. G Gabe Football on Twitter. Of course, check out the podcast over on the Bar Room Network with Greg Gabriel, man. As always, we appreciate you coming on the show for Greg Gabriel and Jason McKee. It's your boy Pat the Designer back at it again. Y'all let us who you think is going to be the next Chicago Bears head coach. Let us know in the comments below. Y'all stay safe out there, Chicago. Bear down, one love.